G'day, Jets fans. It's me, David, here for this weekend, this week's preview and review of the Newcastle Jets A-League season and also W-League season two, I might add. We're going to, first of all, start with a review of the round 14 clash with Sydney, where the Jets went down 2-1 to the runaway Premier's elect, I suppose. And joining me to discuss that match in detail is our regular Andy. How are you, mate?
Very well, Dave. And it's great to... This game was as close to a win as we can get at the moment. So keen to chat about it.
Yes, and mate, it is just you and I on the pod tonight. So a little bit different, but we're going to get through just fine.
We certainly will. We're itching for the 300 appearances A-League record, so... Let's get it done.
Yeah, let's get it done, mate. It's it was billed as a doubleheader, and the information came out probably about Wednesday night that there was potential that the game could be cancelled due to the expected high temperatures and also the smoky conditions. As it turned out, just the W League match was cancelled in what I thought was a bit of a strange decision, to be honest. It was quite warm. No warmer, certainly the conditions we faced in Adelaide, and I was there to experience that directly. But the A-League game still went on, and the Jets went down 2-1 to Sydney FC in what was probably not an unexpected result, Andy.
No, it definitely wasn't an unexpected result. And yeah, with the W League game, whilst it was unfortunate, it was explained a bit on the, I think it was the Monday edition of the Fox podcast this week. They explained that, you know, Adelaide had the travel. They would have had to book accommodation, book flights, and then possibly get to the ground and cancel it. And I believe there was a game the week before that was either delayed or cancelled altogether.
It was the game in Canberra.
Yeah, and there was a bit of an issue around that. So they made what I think was the right decision for everyone to just can it. I wasn't able to make the game, but it didn't, from the reports I heard, it didn't really eventuate to the conditions that they thought they would have. But you can bet that if Adelaide did travel over, it would have ended up being horrendous conditions and it would have just been a waste of time and money for everyone. So hopefully we pick up that game as the W League sort of get a bit more of a bounce and get used to their coaching setup at the moment, which we'll chat about later as well.
Yeah, and it was the first game for Craig Deans sitting in the hot seat after Ernie Merrick's departure the week before. He selected a slightly changed lineup, and the big inclusion for me was the return of Abdiel Arroyo, which I really didn't expect, mate.
No, I was pretty shocked to see him starting. It went from during the week being a, you know, he's getting minutes into the legs and all that sort of stuff, to he's leading the line, and from memory played a large chunk of the game. I'm not sure exactly when it was that he went off, but he certainly,
you got about 60.
Yeah, so 60 minutes for a player that's been out for a few weeks. Clearly he doesn't struggle with fitness overall when he's injured.
He really had it. He had a very early opportunity with a good piece of work that Matty Miller managed to put across into him. He was right in the 6-yard box, and a better header, and it was past Redmayne. Instead, he headed it down and straight to Redmayne as it was. And how different the game could have been, mate, had he taken that opportunity. And look, you probably put it down to rustiness, but the Jets really could have done with him putting it in the back of the net straight away and put Sydney on the back foot.
Yeah, absolutely. But I guess he hasn't been, you know, even before he got injured, he wasn't really consistently playing long minutes or anything like that. So, yeah, to be in that position where, hang on, I might actually get a goal here, maybe he just forgot what to do in that situation. But it certainly gave me hope for the rest of the game from that.
The other addition that we had to the lineup was the return of Nick Fitzgerald, who came in for, look, Arroyo Fitzgerald came in for Paddy Langlois and Angus Thurgate, who returned to the bench. And a player that I think a select few fans have been calling out for to return to the lineup, give us the width, particularly when we were playing Ugarkovic out in that right. How did you see Nick Fitzgerald returning back to the lineup this week?
Yeah, I would probably put myself in one of those fans. As I've said before, was very sceptical when Fitzgerald first came to the club, but he's shown enough to me that I was always sort of questioning why he wasn't getting more starts. He did really well, I think, in this game. The only real problem was in the lead up to the first goal. Ninkovic sort of took the ball off him and he seemed to quite lazily just sort of dive in and hope to tackle him. And I think it was Andy Harper in commentary said, you know, at that point you're pretty much on the halfway line. You don't really need to dive in like that. Actually run with him for a bit and hope to push him off the ball a bit, which I know is hard with a player of Ninkovic's skill. But, yeah, it really gave Ninkovic that time to look up. And, as you know, he is pretty much a wizard when he gets time on the ball, and he was able to execute that perfectly.
We'll jump into our standard approach, which is having a look at the good, bad, and interesting for the match. And we did go down 2-1. So, what was your good? What was the good that you saw during the match, mate? You take away and reflect on it and think that that's actually something we can build upon.
My good for the match was just again Arroyo being able to express himself. There were a few times where he would make good runs and he did a little sort of knock it back behind him and get across, and his positioning for his shot down the other end was great. So I just hope that, yeah, these connections that we've been waiting for are starting to really come, and perhaps it was mentioned tonight on the NBN news that Daniel McBreen's been doing a lot more with the team as far as the shooting aspect goes. So maybe it's something coming from that, is just that confidence for our players. But, yeah, Arroyo was definitely the good for me in this game.
Yeah, I mean, if the footage is any indication, they were lobbing balls and getting it on the half volley 30 yards out and letting everyone have a crack, you know, the way McBreen was coaching him. No, I'm just kidding. But if Arroyo, do you think he's a striker, mate? Because I'm not completely convinced that the centre of the park is where he naturally feels comfortable. I saw him during the match drifting out, feeling more comfortable drifting out wide, creating that space perhaps for Dimi and others to exploit that didn't really happen. And none better than right at the beginning of the second half, there was, a good piece of play that created the opportunity for Miller, I think it was, to put a ball straight across the box. And my eyes went straight. It was down the Ganinan end, the northern end of the ground, and I'm seated down the southern end. But my eyes immediately went to the middle of the box, and I'm thinking, where's Arroyo getting something on here to have a shot on goal? He's not there. In the end, no one's in the box, which was a cardinal rule of Ernie. You've got to get people in the box. And instead, he's out the left wing and he's picking it up, trying, and sure, he won us a corner, but won us a throw in from it. But to be honest, mate, I'd rather him be in there and possibly concede a goal kick than be up there trying to win us a throw in as well. Like, it's just not completely gelling for me, and I'm not completely convinced. How about you?
Yeah, I don't know whether it's that he's used to playing as an out-and-out striker and sort of leading the line, and it looked like we sort of went with the more 4-4-2 formation from the graphic that I looked at before jumping on the pod. But he definitely seemed to, in the first half, I believe it was, he had a few different little runs and was able to create chances that were able to get the ball in. He was, if my memory is correct, involved in the, you know, shot that Stevie had, and
He provided the assist
where he was able to bring the ball in from wide and create opportunity. And maybe that's just the way that we're going to get goals, with, you know, those people being in and around the box and not expecting shots to always come from that one person.
He was mere centimetres off drawing his level, to be fair, mate. That good little 1-2 that he had on the edge of the box where he was played through, you were just waiting to see the net ripple with the ball that he blasted and set it, cannoned off the crossbar and back out into the field of play. And that was our gilt edge opportunity right there to equalise and potentially put some pressure on Sydney, further pressure on Sydney, because we were really dominating play at that point in time.
Yeah, and I think Craig Dean said in his post-match press conference that Arroyo is a real, you know, confidence player, and a lot of those sort of South American style players are, that once they get a few goals, they get the confidence to go on and score many, and any other day he might have put that away, but this time he just kind of, I think because of that confidence, wanted to put his boot through it. And then for the rebound, I have to say that whilst Dimmy's a creative player and makes chances out of nothing on a lot of occasions, there was a bit of selfishness. I don't know if he had his head down too much and didn't see Fitzgerald pretty much open on the penalty spot with space and time to have a crack. Mm. But I guess some of the shots that Fitzgerald's had in his time that he's been here, you probably wouldn't be too confident to pass it to him either. But with that much time and space, you'd hope that something would happen.
Given the results that we've had recently, if I look at my good for the match, it's probably our second half performance. And that Arroyo chance we just mentioned is probably the best opportunity that we had. But what I took a lot of confidence from, and not confidence is probably a bit too strong, what I took some interest in and some positive thoughts is we pegged Sydney back. To an extent, they were looking to hit us on the counter, and their substitutions were really defensive substitutions. They weren't they had the points, they had the goals on the board, and they were and they had the 3 points, as I mentioned, they're wrapped up, and it's up to us to create and do something to earn a share of those points, if not get all of them. But for me, the maturity, the defensive solidity that we showed in that second half gives me some level of interest that we can still cause some teams some problem this year, even though we're now rooted to the bottom of the table now with a 4-point gap from second to second last. That there's some fight within this team yet.
Yeah, and I am a firm believer that if a manager decides to essentially park the bus and set up to solely defend, that just goes to show that manager is worried that, you know, you are creating chances, that you are getting into positions where something may happen. And that is a great thing to see, that the top of the league team are still wary that, you know, the opposition that are, as you said, firmly on the bottom of the table at the moment are potentially going to get the better of us if something goes wrong here.
Mm. For me, we move on from the good. And look, before we move on from the good, actually, I'm going to give a shout out to Stevie, Stevie UG. That was a cracking goal, mate. I honestly can't remember the last goal outside the box we scored. And that was a terrific strike. And he's mentioned that he wants to create, not just be creative, but he wants to become a more complete midfielder and contribute to the scoreboard as well as to the build-up play. And that's a couple of goals now in the last probably four matches for the club, four or five. And we need to see more of that from Stevie. To quote Ferns, it's almost a thunder bastard.
Yeah, I early this season said one of the biggest things I wanted to see was Stevie completing his game by being able to have a shot. There were last season and the early parts of this season, there was a lot of times where he would get to that 18-yard box and you'd hear the collective shoot go around the stadium and he would knock it off to Dimmy or something like that. So the fact that, again, he's getting that confidence to have a crack, and what a crack it was, and Redmayne could do nothing but get up and say, good one, boys. Where were you on that one? Like, so, yeah, what a crack. And it's bittersweet that that probably puts his, you know, appeal to other clubs up a bit, but hopefully that also puts his dollar value up so that if he ever did depart, we hopefully get a bit of coin to even attempt to possibly maybe in the future replace him.
What was your bad? If we talk about where we could improve from the game, what are the signs and what are the instances that you saw during the match that Craig Deans is going to be highlighting in his area in areas that the club team can improve this week?
Two seasons ago, this would be the common one that everyone would say, but I'm going to go with Kanner for this game. I just was watching the highlights to refresh myself earlier tonight, and he seemed to really lose his man. Ninkovic was able to pretty much just go straight through him on a number of occasions, and in most of their, well, for pretty much both their goals, he was either caught out of position or just absolutely, you know, left behind. So I don't think it was one of his better games, and he's seemed to struggle the last couple of weeks. So it'll be interesting to see how he bounces back, whether someone replaces him or whether, you know, Deansy throws the arm around him and says, look, it's your spot and you need to find that form again that you had in the grand final season.
I certainly think the Jets, it wasn't a coincidence that the Jets' period of dominance that I mentioned just earlier coincided with the substitution of Kanner in a way. I thought he was quite sloppy for certainly the second goal. Do you think that that's going to come into consideration for Deansy, the impact Angus Thurgate had playing that a little bit further back beside Ugarkovic during the match that coincided, as I mentioned, that the Jets' period of sustained pressure and possession, that could be something to consider given how easily as well Melbourne City cut us apart last time we played them at Hunter Stadium. Oh, sorry, at McDonald Jones Stadium.
I guess, yeah, one of the biggest things would be with a new coach comes new ideas, and I don't know if Deansy is going to be so set in his ways. Ernie was very reluctant to change things, whereas if I think as much as Deansy says that he's not here to change too much and to just steady the ship, you still need to get results so that the club can attract a certain caliber of coach moving forward. So I think it'd be a great shout to see Gus put into that position and given a start, and then maybe bring Kanner on to sort of seal things up if we're ahead or something like that. But again, it's that whole, there's not a massive, you know, I guess, pile to choose from. So yeah, it'd be interesting to see if that is a decision that is made. Mm.
Yeah, it's a tough choice for Deansy this week. Kanner hasn't been great the last couple. Last week he wasn't great. Yeah, do you look at times like this to bank on your experience? Not too sure. We'll wait and see. For me, the bad was the manner in which we conceded the two goals. We started with a real positive approach and frame that we touched on earlier, and I think the crowd were really getting behind that. There was a level of, they could really sense a change, that the energy levels had increased, the pressure that the boys and the press was there, that we were trying to move the ball a lot faster, and the crowd were really buying into that. And then to concede a typical mistake, I guess, of the Jets the last few weeks, a very soft goal to Lafondra, and then that really took the wind out of the crowd. That really took the voice out of the crowd, and it probably played against us to an element. If Stevie's goal hadn't come so soon after conceding that first goal, I think that actually could have played a factor for the team for the rest of the match. But then again, to again switch off completely and see both goals come down that right hand side, I think it was, and again, the soft manner and the space with which we gave Ninkovic the time to play the ball just really, really was, they're coach killers, and signs that we've still got a bit of work to do to bring some of these mistakes out of the Jets of old and turn them into a new and more formidable defensive side that we had previously seen in the early era of Ernie's tenure. Because it's there, it's just a matter of working it out and working with Deansy's defensive structure. But for me, that was the bad, Andy. Did you want to add anything more to that?
Yeah, I would just, I guess, agree that our defense of late has definitely, like, we've conceded 17 goals or whatever it was. So, yeah, our defense is definitely an area that is going to need to improve. But it'll be interesting to see how they do that because, again, another area where there's not too many other options.
And look, if the Sydney Football Destroy Bots had their full strength side, they were missing Zullo, though he came on. They were missing Grant, they're missing Bratton, they're missing O'Neill. Real key players to how they like to set up and the style of football that they play. They really could have turned it on and run away with that game. But as it was, the Jets were able to not, we weren't able to salvage anything, but we were able to put in elements of a performance that I think that the Deans and the coaching staff can certainly build on for this coming match with City.
Yeah, for sure. And I don't think that Sydney lost too much by not having those players available, but definitely take your point that if they were available, we probably would have looked at another 4-0 just because of the fact that all of those players are attacking players that link the play so much better than what there was.
What was the interesting elements that you took away from the match?
My interesting one, kind of from the match, but just with the how our defence is going on the previous point, it looks like, I don't know if Topper Stanley is starting to get frustrated with the small mistakes that Lockie Jackson's making, whether it's, you know, he's trying to, like Topper Stanley's trying to guide the entire back line as the only sort of real seasoned professional player. But it was also interesting to see before the game, Nigel Bougard there doing media commitments and all that sort of stuff. It doesn't look like he's really in the frame to come back anytime soon. So it'll be interesting to see. I don't think you can change that back line in any way with the personnel that we have, but something's going to have to click because, yeah, the wide side are working well. When Miller would go up, Stevie or Kana would drop back a bit, but then that didn't really work out too well at times. So it's just all about seeing how we're going to plug those holes in defence.
It's an interesting point, and it's certainly something that the team will be working on in training. For me, the interesting point that I'm going to take away is how Lewis Italiano takes his opportunity with Glenn Moss's injury. He literally didn't touch the ball. He wasn't forced to make a save or a catch or anything. I don't even really think he touched it. I think he had 5 touches in total, actually. And so there was nothing for him to do in that period of time that Moss was off. So how the defense respond to Lewis, because he plays a much, much higher line than what Glenn Moss does. More adventurous when coming out of the box, as we well know, with a certain Adelaide FFA Cup match. But this is his opportunity, probably 14 rounds later than it was probably going to be expected for him after the incident that saw him sent off in the FFA Cup over in South Australia. And he'll step in and have to come into a leaky defence and certainly be tested. It'll be interesting, Andy, to see how he goes.
Yeah, I think it'll be very interesting to see how he goes because, as you said, he had that opportunity early and then got suspended and it was hard to drop Glenn Moss really at that point. But I think it's come at a good time. Obviously, you never wish an injury on anyone, but it was quite clear that Glenn Moss, solely on experience, no matter what the guy did, he was always going to keep the number one spot unless an injury kept him out. So to sort of hit that reset button, they were saying on the commentary for the game that Luis Italiano had been absolutely killing it in the youth league. And so let's see how he goes with the step up, and hopefully he doesn't have another brain snap and, you know, come out and try to jump over the top of people.
Yeah, absolutely. I hope so too, mate. I hope so too. So where does this leave the Jets? Well, with the very late and somewhat controversial victory for the Mariners over the Victory, the Jets are now, as I mentioned earlier, 4 points away from the second last place, 10th place. Mariners, who are equal on points with Brisbane Roar. In saying that, we are 6 points away from 6th place Melbourne Victory, who moved ahead of Adelaide on goal difference. The Jets really need to get a win very soon, Andy, if we're any shake at getting away from this wooden spoon position, because I don't think we should even be contemplating finals football at this point in time.
No, I don't think we should. But at the same time, our next two games are going to define our season. In my opinion, we have Melbourne City away and then Wellington Phoenix away. So two games that statistically, without going into it, I'm sure, are not at all our friend. So if we can come away with that, and then following that, we've got, you know, a game against Western United at home, the Mariners at home, and then the Wanderers away. So that those three games at the back there, I can see something coming out of. It's these next two games against City and Phoenix that we need to be getting something out of. And as you said, that the sort of logjam that there is from fifth down, a few wins and a few results our way, and we could be right up there in forever seventh, but it depends. Yeah, really, I think, as I said, these next two games are the crucial ones for us.
So who is your player of the match, mate? For me, it's got to be Ugarkovic. The guy was everywhere. It's a fantastic goal, and I think he showed why he needs to be an ever-present force an ever-present force in our midfield.
Yeah, totally agree. I sat there. If it wasn't for that goal, I may have given Arroyo a shout for this week, but my vote was definitely with Stevie. Just the composure to take it off his least preferred foot and just put his boot through it. It was a sensational effort.
And the punters agree with both of us as well, with Stevie taking away the 3 points in our player of the match voting. Cantor actually, people disagree with you about Cantor's performance. He took away the 2 points and Arroyo got the one. So thank you very much, everyone, for voting. If you are listening to this, be it through Football Nation Radio or be it through the Jetstream podcasts, through the app, through your podcast app where you've subscribed to the Jetstream, make sure that you follow us on Twitter and Facebook, because the links to the Player of the Match voting for each W League and A League match go up in the day or so after the match. All right, Andy, well, we'll leave the match behind now, and I guess we'll move on to the news section of the podcast, because it's been a pretty busy news week for the Jets. And first of all, we'll start off with the coaching situation, where there's really been no real names or rumours coming out since, the first 24 hours that we covered, with the names like Sven-Göran Eriksson, Tony Vidmar as well, possibly putting their name up. Have you heard anything coming about, or it seems to be all quiet on the Western front?
Yeah, no, the only name I've seen sort of thrown around in the past 48 or so hours has been whether it's worth giving Damian Zane a go. Perhaps, you know, he's proven himself with back-to-back-to-back-to-back NPL titles, and, yeah, that maybe he is a player that... a coach that could make that transition that no one would really expect too much of, so that if he was to be successful, they would praise him. If he wasn't to be successful, he could easily go back to the NPL and be proud of the fact that he made that jump. But yeah, all your big names, apart from Phil Moss on Fox trying to link John Hutchinson as...
We're going to bleep that name out.
Yeah, that was the only thing. And I think John Aloisi, the usual sort of merry-go-round circus of coaches linked to Australian jobs.
What do you think about Aloisi? I mean, personally, I mean, the guy got there, got Brisbane Roar to the top four, essentially, 2 years consecutive before he lost his job there. Worked under quite difficult conditions with owners that didn't necessarily put a lot of money into the team, so it would fit quite in with the profile of the Jets. Does a name like Aloisi give you any sort of confidence with how he could, that he could come into the Jets? Because the link with Laurie's certainly there. If you think about it, he was the striker who missed at the back post late on in the grand final defeat to the Jets back in season three.
I wouldn't rule it out. It wouldn't be the kind of appointment that drastically excites me, but at the same time, I do agree that I could see how a selection like that could be appealing, especially if he's prepared to, you know, agree to come in with a fairly tight budget and he knows the squad that he's going to have. As you said, he rightfully went back-to-back top four, and hopefully having that relationship, because as you said, he had no real hope from owners, but also the backroom staff there. Whereas if here, at least you have Laurie, you have Griff and those kind of people that can be that conduit between the owners and the head coach. So I wouldn't rule it out, but it wouldn't be the, you know, first choice that I would go to.
Yeah, I'm still unsure as to who I'm putting in as the preferred candidate. For me, if I've got to be forced for a name, it's probably Ocon, another name that hasn't been widely mentioned or considered. I'm not sure whether he would. He's becoming in under certain circumstances that are similar to the reason why he left the Mariners last season, I think it was. I suppose that you hope that his legacy with the club as it being a former captain, season two, the legacy that he has with our region, with our side, that he would be a very fitting replacement for Ernie Merrick, someone to bring in new ideas and a new approach. Because realistically, we've been playing 4-2-3-1, I should say, for the last 13 years, and it'd be interesting to see something different for a while. Andy, do you have any thoughts on Ocon?
Yeah, I would be very happy with Paul Ocon. I think that he, not just by budget, but by other things that, you know, Mike Charlesworth seems to put his sort of focus on, meant that a lot was taken away from the team. Paul Ocon did say on a podcast that he is in a position where he can wait out for a job and doesn't want to just take a job because it's there, and that he wouldn't be too keen on going into an environment where he had a tight budget. But I think it also comes down to, you know, looking at the youth squad and the players that you could bring through and other local talent, and not necessarily relying on a massive budget. So maybe, again, with someone like Laurie and Joel, he might be tempted. The other name that was thrown around, I think, as a bit of a joke, was Craig Johnson, and I don't think that he would be prepared to do that. The other one that did excite me, honestly, as much as it's a bit of a pipe dream, was Harry Kuehl, solely from a business standpoint. The amount of sponsors that would come in from that, you'd probably fill the stadium on people just wanting to see him, and not fill it in the 30-something thousand capacity, but definitely get that consistent 10,000 to 12,000 off the back of that. So do you take that risk to make a bit more money that you can hopefully reinvest in the squad, because it's money that is made and kept here rather than having to go to China and then get funneled back through? So
yeah,
it'd be interesting to see.
it'll be very interesting to see how this situation pans out. They set the Jets set themselves 2 weeks. We'll wait and see how that goes. The other piece of news, mate, is Matt Redenton going overseas to trial with a championship club, a championship club that has since been revealed to be Reading. Redenton wasn't on the bench, which surprised me on Saturday, and had found himself relegated to the pine, I guess, under Ernie Merrick with the return of Cantor earlier in the season. He's off contract at the end of the year, so any transfer fee that would be negotiated between the Jets and Reading would be negligible at best. What do you think of this opportunity for Matt Redenton?
Well, there was an article on the Fox website today with the headline, "Two A-League Young Guns Handed Massive Overseas Trials." And one of those young guns was Matt Redenton. Look, I don't want to keep whipping Matt Redenton, but if he can secure a move to Europe, Central Coast, wherever he wants to go to, then I don't think we lose anything by letting go of him at this point. To my knowledge, he's holding up a foreign player spot, so therefore, why not free that up for someone that is actually going to, you know, play regularly and make an impact when they do?
I certainly think that if he is to go, while we're stocked with certainly player numbers in that central midfield position, I think that we could be looking to use it differently for a wide player. Potentially a left back, even a striker. Well, 'cause the areas that were a little bit short on numbers, as we've seen. A piece of social media that was put on Instagram, Facebook, and the like is some very encouraging signs for the Jets with the return to the park of Wes Houlihan. He's returned to some non-weight-bearing running, but pictures today show that he had a ball at his feet. He was doing some jogging, and videos on Twitter that James Gardner took of him putting in some crosses for Arroyo as well. Certainly a long way off being any sort of consideration for involvement in the match. But again, the timing of around at least another 8 weeks, him being out. But we hold out hope that we could see Wes Houlihan sooner rather than later. And look, if any luck before the end of the season.
Yeah, you saw Wes in the FFA Cup against Edgeworth. The guy is just a great player.
And he's a class above.
I think even at his age, there's still a lot to give. So I would hope that the club is sort of planning for a similar thing to what we did with Ronnie Vargas, where, you know, you sort of say to him, look, unfortunately, we didn't get the full use out of you. We've treated you well through your injury. How about you give us another season just to see what he can do? And hopefully he does come back in and makes that impact. And from the few clips I've seen, he doesn't seem to be, granted he didn't have the, you know, bone-breaking injuries that someone like Vargas did, who come back a bit skittish and a bit, you know, unsure about how hard to go in initially. So hopefully with Wes Houlihan coming in and just being able to link that up, but again, it creates another issue of where to play him when you've got everyone back.
Mm. No, look, I think he fits in quite well where we return to more of a 4-2-2-2 type formation. But look, we remain hopeful that we see Wes in some sort of capacity, and then he doesn't turn out to be something like a Jason Colina, where we see an unfortunate injury affect what could have been a fantastic signing for the club. Next piece of news is the announcement from the Jets that Glenn Moss, after being substituted in the second half of the clash with Sydney, will be out for the next 4 to 6 weeks. With a calf injury. It's unlucky for Mossy, and we talked about the opportunity that this poses for Lewis Italiano, but when I saw him go down with that injury straight away, you could almost tell that it was his calf, because it was a very similar manner that he went down, holding the back of his leg in a similar way Allison, the Liverpool goalkeeper, did very early in the season when he suffered a similar injury. kicking a ball out to the field of play, Andy.
Yeah, I think that perhaps, I don't want to say it's nearing the end of his career, because he is an exceptional goalkeeper and we're lucky to have him, but I don't know how much is left on his contract. But if it is nearing the end, I would say that the discussions have probably already been had. I know he does a lot with the youth team as sort of a impromptu goalkeeping coach, so maybe he will move into more of a...
He's transitioning to life after football.
Yes, well, we're putting him into a nice area to be able to kickstart his coaching career, that's for sure.
Absolutely. And we do hope Glenn has a speedy and successful recovery from his injury too. The final piece of news that I want to talk to you about is that Ash Wilson, the assistant coach of the W League, will be formally taking the reins of the W League team in the period that Craig Deans is acting as the interim coach for the A-League side. Great piece of internal promotion for the Jets there as well. Opportunity for Ash to show what she's about, and a voice that the team are no doubt familiar to maintain some level of normality in what is a bit of a topsy-turvy time behind the scenes for the club, Andy.
Yeah, I guess 2 points on this one. One is great to see Ash get a chance after, I think it was about 5 years of being at the club, and a great promotion. We don't see enough of women in coaching roles, at least head coach roles, in the W League. I think there's a handful over the years, but...
Heather Garriock's the only current one in Canberra.
Yeah, and look how well Canberra are doing. So, but the other thing I guess you could say is, it reading between the lines of it, and I could be completely wrong, but perhaps Laurie and Martin Lee and the sort of decision makers are looking at it going, we need to make the right appointment here for the A-League squad. So taking that, Deansy was very in his first press conference at the training ground when he took on the role, sort of said how he would juggle the two. He'd be with the men of the morning, the women at night, and all that sort of stuff. And now it's come out as we're going to hand the reins over to Ash. She's going to take control of the team. I'll be there for guidance, but my main focus will be on the A-League team. Just goes to show that I think we're taking this coaching appointment seriously, and whilst it's important to get someone in, but it's also important to get the right person. So hopefully due diligence can be done and they can really go through, you know, ticking all the boxes to make sure that who we do bring in is going to last and we are able to stop the merry-go-round a bit.
Well said. Well said, mate. That is an excellent segue then into the clash this weekend. It's a double header for the Jets in Melbourne against Melbourne City, with the W League kicking off at 5 p.m, the A League kicking off at 7:30 at Amy Park. We'll start with the W League, mate, and the team comes off a weekend where they didn't have a match, as we mentioned earlier. And they come up against a red-hot Melbourne City side who are looking for their eighth consecutive win. As they stand, they are the table toppers with only one, with seven wins from their eight matches and one draw. That one draw being a round one draw that they had with the Jets in Newcastle. So we are the only team to take points off Melbourne City so far this year. Do you think we can do it again, or... a team that really have the wood over us will come away victorious again?
Yeah, I was going to say, I think we will certainly take confidence from the fact that we're the only team to hold them out and not lose outright against them. But just looking at the table, as proud as I am of the W League team this year, we're really starting to see that void open up. I mean, we're seven odd points behind Canberra now. So if we don't sort of get something out of this game with the Adelaide catch-up game, we've really only got four rounds left to, you know, really make a difference in this season. So, yeah, it's crucial to get something out of this game, if not a win.
Yeah, I certainly don't think that the Jets will be considering finals aspirations anymore. We are, it's a top four in the W League, and we are 9 points away from Brisbane Roar with a game in hand. But it's considering after seven games, we only have 4 points, I think it's a very, very difficult ask. I think Melbourne City will be too good for us, and I expect them to come away winners, unfortunately, during this game. We got them on, we managed to get something from them in their first round, but since then they've been near perfect. Well, they have been perfect, I should say. So, and I think that they'll continue that against a team that's really struggled defensively of late. So, yeah, I think as hard as it is to say, I think that Melbourne City will just be too good for our Jets this weekend in the W League. If we look ahead then to the City and the Jets in the A League, mate, we look at the lineups straight up, and I think Lewis Italiano is obviously going to come into the team. Noah James going to the bench as well. Are you making any other changes to the lineups? You hinted at possibility Ben Kantorowski could struggle to retain his spot. Is Nick Fitzgerald retaining his spot as well? And a player who's kind of gone under the radar for being in some ways out of form is also potentially Jason Hoffman. How are you making any changes to the starting lineup ahead of our clash with City?
No, I really do think that the lineup will stay the same. As I mentioned earlier, the only one that I thought maybe you would see is possibly Nigel Bougard, but he sort of ruled that out earlier in the week, saying that he's still quite a bit away and just can't sort of get this injury right. And the fact that he's no longer even occupying a bench spot says a lot about that. The only real change that I could see, and it's not really a change, it would be more just maybe Kane Shepherd might get on the park a bit earlier on and given an opportunity to make a bit more of an impact. But overall, apart from maybe Kana swapping out for Thurgate, as you mentioned earlier, Dave, I don't think there'll be much change at all.
City this week released Javier Cabrera, the winger, who's terminated his contract with immediate effect. And if we have a look at the City's form in recent times, they earned a 2-2 draw with Brisbane last weekend. They had a 3-2 win against Western United, but that was after they earned a three-goal lead at halftime and conceded two penalties to nearly at least lose all 3 points from that match. They lost 2-1 to Sydney. They lost 2-1 to Victory. And before that, they beat us 4-0. So since they smashed us, it's really been a mixed bag of form for City. And people have been starting to question their title ambitions and their title credentials. But they'll take confidence coming up against the Jets side, who are certainly in no form of stability themselves. And they hope to repeat their performance, no doubt.
Yeah, I think whilst they've lost one player, they've still got quality across the park. Jamie McLaren, not hopefully, but he will turn it on. He usually does. Luna obviously gave us an education in how to run all game and score goals when they played us last. It's that final 1% for Melbourne City that keeps holding them back, and they're going to go down as the team that I guess may become probably going to get banned from the podcast for saying this, but the Liverpool of the A-League from the past few years that is there and thereabouts and then falls apart at the last minute. So
yeah, you're getting banned.
So yeah. As my last pod, I'll just leave that there. Thanks for your time, everyone. Yeah. Good to have you listening over the years.
Go out on a high. Why don't you? I actually think that we could take advantage of the difficulties that City have had, certainly holding on to leads, if not putting matches away. And a bit of the confidence and control that we showed in that second half, I hope will feed into the players to give them a level of self-belief that they can take something from this match. Like you, I don't expect any changes to Craig Deans to make any changes except for the forced one through Luis Italiano. My prediction for the match, mate, is that we will come away with a 2-1 victory over City. What's your prediction for the game?
Yeah, I agree. I think that it will be I'm actually going to go with a 3-2 win. I think it will just be that game. I think we had one against City last season, maybe the season before, where it was just they scored, we scored, sort of.
We definitely had one under Scott Miller. Joel, inspiration Joel keeps on reminding us about that every chance he gets. Shout out to you, Joel.
Yeah, so it'll be that game that we probably don't expect anything really, and then we come away with a great win and we're all sitting there saying, you know, we've turned the corner and give it to Deansy for the rest of the season type discussions.
Very interesting to see how that pans out, mate. Very quickly before we wrap up the pod, we'll take two games each to preview. I'll throw the first one to you Friday night for the rest of the A-League's round. Adelaide United take on Melbourne Victory. What's your prediction there?
I think it'll be a close one. Both teams are struggling. They're on equal points. They can leapfrog each other and put a little bit of daylight, but I actually think they'll play out a draw. It'll probably end up like a 2-2 draw. So we'll go with that.
Sounds like a classic six-pointer there, mate. The next match is fourth place Wellington visiting Brisbane Roar, who, as I mentioned earlier, sitting in ninth place just on goal difference. Wellington are in absolutely electric form at this point in time. Brisbane Roar getting a little bit of confidence and starting to show some structure under Robbie Fowler. Interestingly, he continues to bench Roy O'Donovan for these matches. But funnily enough, it seems to be working with the goals that they're scoring. I think Wellington will be too classy for them. I think they'll have just a bit too much. And Wellington to come out 3-1 victors on Saturday in the earlier game at Suncorp Stadium before the Jets take on Melbourne City on Saturday at 7:30. On Sunday at 4:00, Andy, Western United take on the Central Coast Mariners. How many will the Mariners lose by?
I actually think the Mariners will lose by 3. So it'll be 3-0.
Yep, I'm going to agree with you. Western United will get on the board 3 times, but I think the Mariners will get 1 probably through a Western United own goal. So let's say 3-1 there. The
or
final match.
VAR decisions or something like that.
The final game is a 6:30 kickoff. Western Sydney Wanderers host Perth Glory in what could be a very interesting match for Western Sydney, because there were hints from Marcus Babbel that his position this week, or if not, certainly they lose this coming weekend, could be his last in charge of Western Sydney. And it's red hot Perth again. They are in exceptional form after being bottom of the table earlier in the season. So third versus eighth. I again think Perth will just have too much. Bruno Fornaroli's fantastic. I'm going to say 2-0 victory for them here. Andy, did you want to add anything more to your prediction for this game?
No, I actually think it might be a bit worse and we might see a 4-0 win to Perth Glory. But you've got to really ask, like, how is Babbel surviving this? Like, only merit, sure, we were lower on the ladder, but Western Sydney have become a very proud club that want to be there and thereabouts every season. So it's interesting that they're hanging on to him, but there were rumours during the rounds that maybe that's what Harry Kuehl's actually waiting out for, is that bigger sort of club in Western Sydney. So
Could be. Could be very interesting. Well, thank you very much, Andy, for joining us this week. And thank you, listeners, whether you've tuned in to us through your podcast app, through your phone, or listening to us online, or whether you're currently listening to us through Football Nation Radio as well. We appreciate the time that you've spent listening to us gibber on for an hour. Andy, thanks very much for joining us, mate.
No worries, Dave. Hope you enjoy doing the pod in the future, as I won't be here, apparently.
Well, we'll have you back. You can write, you can go and write in the chalkboard 50 times over that Jurgen Klopp is a Gengen-pressing god. So yes. Thanks, everyone, for joining us. I hope that you enjoy this weekend's A-League matches, whatever they bring up for you. Get out there, support those Jets, and until then, go the Jets.
Go the Jets. Oh, I'm down.